In the days when the judges ruled, begins the book of Ruth. It was a dark time in the history of Israel. There was violence and instability, inconsistent leadership and lots of blood. Everyone did what they thought was right in their own eyes, we're told. And that wasn't necessarily what God said was right. After Ruth come two books of Samuel, full of plots and battles, a weak priest and his wicked sons, a crazy king and warring tribes. Philistines, Amorites, Jebusites, Amalekites, and heaps of other ites swirl around with evil intent. So, the book of Ruth is a lovely little breath of calm in the midst of all of this chaos. It's a story about ordinary people doing ordinary things, living and dying, loving and leaving, loyalty, harvesting barley, following God's law, and making a new family. Somehow it doesn't seem to fit, but it turns out to be a really important part of God's big plan. Now, the book has three main characters and four parts. Chapter one is a story of loss and tragedy and death. Naomi is a poor Israelite living in Moab, and she's experienced terrible famine, the loss of her husband, the death of her two sons, and we're only up to verse 5. But it's not all bad, as we shall see. Chapter 2 introduces Boaz, a man of noble character. Take note, gentlemen. If there were more men like Boaz in the world, it would be a safer and happier place. Chapter 3, and Boaz calls Ruth a woman of noble character. But we know that already because we know what happened in the previous two chapters. And chapter 4 brings it all together in redemption and joy and the birth of a baby who turns out to be very important. Now, three of our home group members are going to share a reflection this morning about each of these three characters. But before they do, we're going to sing a simple little song that we're going to repeat after each reflection. It's called Bless the Lord, My Soul, and I'll ask Peter to play it through once and then we'll sing it twice through. Thanks, Peter.
We read from the scriptures from the book of Ruth, chapter 1, verses 6 to 9. Naomi and her Moabite daughters-in-law. Then she started to return with her daughters-in-law from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab that the Lord had considered his people and given them food. So she set out from the place where she had been living, she and her two daughters-in-law, and they went on their way to go back to the land of Judah. But Naomi said to her two daughters-in-law, "Go back, each of you, to your mother's house. May the Lord deal kindly with you, as you have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant you that you may find security, each of you, in the house of your husband." Then she kissed them, and they wept aloud. And we read from Isaiah chapter 40, verse 31. "But those who wait for the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint."
I'm really inspired by Naomi's enduring trust in God and the way she lived her faith. We heard in the reading how she undertook the physically daunting journey to Moab, a very hostile neighbouring country. We learned of her ordeal on the death of her husband and sons. Imagine how she must have felt, alone in a foreign land, powerless, but God was her strength in times of grief, uncertainty and anxiety. Names in the Bible had great significance. To know a person's name was to know something about them. The name Naomi in Hebrew means pleasant or gentle. The story begins with an ordinary Jewish family, a gentle, dutiful young Naomi married to Elimelech, who belonged to the clan of Ephrath, and they lived in Bethlehem, Judah. They had two sons whom they named Mahlon, which appears to mean to be sick, and Kilian, which indicated one who was pining or failing. The name Bethlehem, Beit Lechem, means house of bread, because it was normally a fertile land. Sadly, a famine took hold in Bethlehem, and to preserve his family, Elimelech took to the drastic step to leave for another neighbouring country, Moab. The journey on foot of some 50 miles to Moab would have been extremely daunting for Naomi and her family, especially if her sons were not strong. They would have travelled in searing heat through barren landscape. And when Elimelech died shortly after their arrival in Moab, it must have been a bitter blow to Naomi, testing her faith. Under Jewish law, she was not permitted to take a Moabite husband. However, Mahlon and Kilian both married Moabite girls Orpah and Ruth. For around 10 years, Moab was home to Naomi, and Naomi's bereavement would probably have been eased by this new family life. However, Naomi's faith was severely challenged once again when her sons Mahlon and Kilian died well before their time. She must have felt that God had dealt her yet another crushing blow, being left alone without a husband or sons in a foreign land. Can you, as I do, feel the pain of her loss? But despite all her own difficulties, Naomi showed compassion for her daughters-in-law, who were also left alone with no children. The relationship between Naomi, Ruth, and Orpah would have strengthened as they depended on each other for support. Naomi's faith must have set an amazing example for her daughters-in-law. When Naomi heard the famine in Bethlehem was over, she believed God had not forsaken his people. With this new hope, she was determined that with her two daughters-in-law, she should leave Moab and set out for her true home. In faith and with God's guidance, she commenced the arduous return journey. But then, selflessly, she decided her daughters-in-law should be free to return to their own families in Moab and have the opportunity to start afresh, with the likelihood of being able to take a new husband. Orpah reluctantly returned home, but Ruth refused to leave Naomi. She trusted in the providence of Naomi and her God. What an amazing testament to Naomi's love and faith. They arrived in Bethlehem exhausted and with nothing but a few possessions and a very uncertain future. Naomi's unexpected return, especially with a foreigner from Moab in tow, caused a buzz in the town. Tongues were wagging. Was this the same Naomi they knew from long ago? Naomi's understandable response was that she was not the same. God had dealt harshly with her, and consequently she requested to be called Mara, meaning bitter. After all she had endured, surely we can forgive Naomi for feeling the way she did. It was harvest time when they arrived in Bethlehem, and the law laid down that the gleanings of the harvest must be left for the poor. By chance, in the common open field, Ruth gathered corn in the field belonging to Boaz, Elimelech's kinsman. Naomi's fortune changed with the support of Ruth. Her sacrificial loving care for her mother-in-law and her good reputation became widely known. Under the Levirate law, when a man died childless in his brother was duty-bound to raise an heir through the widow. As this law also extended to the next of kin, Naomi planned that Ruth might marry Boaz. And by returning to her homeland with Naomi, Ruth was able to exercise this right. God rewarded Ruth for her faithfulness with the gift of a husband and son. And Naomi finds solace for her grief in the new grandson. Through adversity and great sadness, Naomi always strived to be obedient to God. Her faith, just as it converted Ruth, encourages us to trust in God who gives us hope. When we trust unconditionally, the seemingly ordinary events of life can take on extraordinary significance. And if our trust is unwavering, those we meet may just be inspired to seek a meaningful relationship with God.
From Ruth chapter 3, verses 1 to 5, we learn about Ruth and Boaz at the threshing floor. Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, I need to seek some security for you, so that it may be well with you. Now, here's our kinsman Boaz, with whose young women you have been working. See? He is winnowing barley tonight at the threshing floor. Now, wash and anoint yourself and put on your best clothes and go down to the threshing floor. But do not make yourself known to the man until he has finished eating and drinking. When he lies down, observe the place where he lies. Then go and uncover his feet and lie down, and he will tell you what to do." She said to her, "All that you tell me, I will do." And we read from Leviticus chapter 19, verses 9 to 10. "When you reap the harvest of your land, you shall not reap to the very edges of your field, or gather the gleanings of your harvest. You shall not strip your vineyard bare or gather the fallen grapes of your vineyard. You shall leave them for the poor and the alien. I am the Lord your God."
We pick up the story of Ruth when she and Naomi have returned to Naomi's town of Bethlehem in Judah. How does Ruth fit into this world? When Naomi pressed her daughters-in-law to return to their own families, Ruth uttered the words, "Where you go, I will go, and where you stay, I will stay. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God." This radically signals that Ruth is changing her identity in a world where that was almost inconceivable. The ancient world had no mechanisms for religious conversion or change of citizenship. The very notion was unthinkable. Religion and tribal lineage defined one's ethnic identity, and this could no more be changed than the colour of one's skin. A Moabite was always a Moabite, wherever he or she lived. And indeed, Ruth is referred to throughout the story as the Moabitess, or the one who returned with Naomi. But from Ruth's perspective, she is becoming an Israelite. She is joining herself to Naomi not only at the private level, but also at the national peoplehood level. So these two widows are living in Bethlehem with no man to protect them and provide for them. Now remember, here at this time, 3,000 years ago, there's no Centrelink, no unemployment benefits, no JobKeeper payment. Okay, now the rains have fallen, and it's time for the barley harvest. And we heard in the Leviticus reading how landowners are expected to leave pickings for the poor. So this is their Centrelink. In accordance with the custom of the time, Ruth sets out to glean from the edges of the barley field. Perchance she chooses a field which belongs to Boaz, a wealthy relative of Elimelech, Naomi's dead husband. Boaz sees the beautiful foreign woman and inquires about her. He is impressed by her loyalty to Naomi, so he instructs his workers to allow her to glean unmolested. Oh yes, sexual harassment in the workplace has been around forever. And to leave additional grain for her to collect. Over the period of the harvest, Naomi observes the growing attachment between the two. However, even though Boaz is a near relative under the Levirate law, he's a bit slow to make a move. Therefore, Naomi plots to reclaim Elimelech's and Mahlon's lost inheritance. Naomi instructs Ruth to wash and perfume yourself and put on your best clothes, then go down to the threshing floor. Ruth obeys Naomi's instructions. She waits until Boaz has finished eating and drinking and settles down to sleep on the threshing floor where he lies to protect his crop from thieves. When he is asleep, Ruth uncovers his feet. Now, a Bible study group never did find what the significance of that was. But she lies at his feet, and in the middle of the night, Boaz stirs and is startled to find Ruth at his feet. She asks him to spread his robe over her, symbolically asking him to marry her, because Boaz is a redeeming kinsman, that is, one who has a right to redeem Elimelech's property and at the same time to marry his son's widow, so as to perpetuate the name of the deceased upon his estate. So what have we learned about Ruth? We have seen her loyalty and allegiance to Naomi, her land and her God, her stubbornness when she makes up her mind to do something, her kindness, her obedience, her implicit trust in Naomi, especially when she agreed to go to Boaz on the threshing floor. If Boaz had rejected her, Ruth's reputation would have been ruined in a society where she was already on the fringes because she was a foreigner. What implications does Ruth's story have for us today, 3,000 years later. At a surface level, Ruth is not an important person. She was from Moab, which was a nation that originated from an incestuous encounter between Lot and one of his daughters, as recorded in Genesis. She was a poor widow. She was living in a foreign land away from her birth family. But God saw her as an important part of his plan for her life, which culminated in her becoming a part of the lineage of Jesus as the grandmother to King David. God's plan typically involves using people who are considered to be unimportant or unimpressive from man's perspective. We may consider ourselves unimportant, but each of us has a part in God's plan.
From Ruth chapter 2, verses 11 and 12. But Boaz answered her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. May the Lord reward you for your deeds, and may you have a full reward from the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come for refuge." And in Ruth chapter 3, verses 10 and 11, he said, "May you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter. This last instance of your loyalty is better than the first. You have not gone after young men, whether poor or rich. And now, my daughter, do not be afraid. I will do for you all that you ask. For all the assembly of my people know that you are a worthy woman." And in James chapter 1, verse 27, "Religion that is pure and undefiled before God the Father is this: to care for orphans and widows in their distress, and to keep oneself unstained by the world."
And my story is about Boaz, an honest man, true and on the square. Ruth and Naomi, of course, have arrived back in Bethlehem at harvest time. And we're imagining that they're almost destitute, and as we said, no Centrelink to help them. Fortunately, the ancient laws demand that the farmers and harvesters do their work in such a way as to allow the poorer people to practice gleaning and thus survive. It seems obvious that all the people of the district understand the journey that the two women have made and the circumstances surrounding their lives. We imagine they are impressed with Ruth's newfound faith in the God of Israel. Ruth sets to work industriously gleaning when Boaz, the wealthy farmer, becomes aware of her presence. Boaz stood out as a follower of God. His faith was evident in his everyday life. He greets people with, "The Lord be with you," and also blesses Ruth at the threshing floor. Do people see God in us, in our everyday words and behaviour? Boaz is clearly impressed and goes above and beyond the cleaning laws of protection when he orders his harvesters to make sure there is plenty for Ruth to glean. He organises his servant girls to offer protection and let the men and boys know that she is to be respected. What opportunities do we take to go above and beyond in caring for the vulnerable in our neighbourhood and beyond? Naomi is excited by the prospects that are appearing and lets Ruth know that Boaz is one of her near relatives. Naomi is thankful for the way that God has led them both to this point after the terrible time they had all experienced previously. We need to understand that at that time, if a man died leaving a widow, the nearest male relative has the right of redemption of the land, which he may buy and also marry the widow, in order to ensure that the land passes to the children of that marriage. He is known as the kinsman redeemer. This gives added understanding to the term redeemer that we use today. Here, the redeemer sustains and perpetuates the lives of the people he redeems. Naomi understands the opportunity that God has provided and makes sure that Ruth is groomed and dressed in her best for the next part of this story. Knowing that Boaz would sleep on the threshing room floor to guard his harvest, Ruth quietly arrives and symbolically sleeps the night at his feet. Boaz doesn't take advantage of her and is impressed by her gesture, seen by some to indicate her availability and consent to marriage. His integrity is again displayed when he also ensures she gets home unseen with some extra barley that he has given her. Are we careful to protect others, to act properly towards them, and not abuse their trust or let them down? However, another local man is identified as a closer relative and therefore has first entitlement to the land and to Ruth. This is indeed a problem for Boaz, who has fallen for Ruth, the beautiful Moabite widow. So he hatches a plan to get around this awkward situation. But Boaz, who follows through on his promises, waits at the city gate until this closer relative comes along. So he sits him down and gathers 10 of the town elders around them. Boaz explains that Naomi has land to sell and that he would buy it. But you, this closer relative, has the first option. The man is at first keen to buy it, but then Boaz explains that at the point of sale, he must also acquire Ruth, the Moabite, as part of the deal, thus following the law. The man withdraws from the deal as he fears it may endanger his own estate. The pair had previously swapped sandals, which was the way of legalizing transactions in Israel, so the man withdraws his sandal, and Boaz is able to declare in front of the gathered witnesses that he has bought from Naomi all the property of Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon, as well as acquiring Ruth as his wife. Do we follow through on what we say? Can people trust us and rely on us to act on our words, doing what God wants us to do and not just talking about it? We read further that Ruth and Boaz had a baby son, Obed, making Naomi a proud grandmother, and Obed becoming part of the lineage that led to the birth of Jesus. In this story, we see how the honest, hard-working, kind and generous Boaz became part of God's plan. We come to a better understanding of the word redeemer and how it relates to sustaining life, offering protection and sustenance, and its place in God's plan. We see the faith of Naomi and Ruth allowing them to be led by God to also be a part of the plan leading to Jesus' birth.
Thank you.
So we've met three ordinary but extraordinary people. They lived in obscurity, but they left a legacy that teaches us about love and loyalty, trust and faithfulness, kindness and obedience. There's Naomi, lighting the Sabbath candles in the darkness of Moab, and at the same time lighting a candle of faith in the heart of her daughter-in-law Ruth. God's faithfulness turns her bitterness into joy and gives her a whole new life. There's Ruth, bravely picking up her bundle, turning her back on everything that was familiar and entering a new life as a stranger, a foreigner. God's redemption gives her a new faith, a new family, and a new place to belong. And there's Boaz, outstanding in his field. He's a rarity, a man who follows God's law but also imitates God's compassion. Reflecting God's character, Boaz is more than worthy to take his place as the great-grandfather of a king and the ancestor of the Christ. Because that's what this little farming family in Bethlehem is all about. God is quietly working, building a family that will bridge the gap between the Garden of Eden and Revelation, between Genesis and the Holy City. Ruth and Boaz had a son called Obed, and Obed was the father of Jesse, and Jesse was the father of David, Israel's greatest king. And centuries later, born in Bethlehem, of David's line, comes Jesus, God with us, the ultimate redeemer, not just of Israel, but of all of us. Although we are also ordinary and obscure, we have our part to play in God's plan. He looks to us to be faithful, whatever our circumstances, to trust in him. He looks to us to be a redeemed people, bought back from spiritual darkness and poverty to live in a brand new way, his way, as part of his family. And he looks to us to demonstrate his character, living with integrity and honesty, loving God, caring for our neighbours near and far, and protecting the earth. This is God's mission. He calls us to be part of it. What a privilege.